Okay, so I'm going to try and explore a couple of questions in this presentation. So we've just been introduced to Akshobhya and Akshobhya's qualities and mirror-like wisdom. The first question I'll look at is, so why is he associated with love or metta? There he is, the classic wisdom Buddha Vajra family. Why metta? How does that make sense? And then the second part, hopefully, will be quite practical. And it's, how does clarity help us develop or open up to metta? Why does that help? Is my volume okay? Can you hear me, Annette?
A little higher.
Okay. Just start waving at me or say something if I'm not loud enough.
Okay, thanks.
So, the first reason we have about why Akshobhya is associated with love or metta is through the poison that he transforms. And that poison is ill will, hatred, aversion. All those different manifestations of pushing away, not wanting, anger, fury, hatred, resentment, righteous indignation. We could go on, couldn't we? And so that's, as Ratnavandana was explaining a couple of days ago, that's the far enemy of the Brahma-Vihara of metta. And then, of course, the near enemy is Pema, this sticky affection where we love someone, but we're getting something out of it. We want something back from that relationship. And you can probably see how that is quite related to hatred, actually, because when we stop getting something back, actually what Pema attached love turns to very, very quickly and easily is ill will, hatred, resentment. You didn't give me what I wanted. How can you have done this to me? So there is actually quite a close relationship between that near enemy and that far enemy. Okay, I'm going to read you a poem. This is by a poet called Claire Maloney. And it's giving a flavour of what it's like to be stuck in ill will. It's called The Knot of It. Hatred, hurtred, the knot of it. The rope dipped in blood and the old blood dried so hard, so fast, so many times. The weight of the knot, a swinging cosh. Hatred, hurtred, the knot of it, the rope. Hating, hurting, the sharp dog. His coat drenched in blood and the old blood dried, so hard, so sharp, so many times. Sharp like varnish, sharp like rust crusts. The razor-coated dog, hating helplessly, hurting hopelessly. Hatred, hurtred, the heft of it. The knot, soaked and hardened, so many times, so many, many times. A fossil of blood, undisentanglable. Hatred, hurtred, the knot of it, the bite. So I think what that brings out for me is just how painful ill will is. It really hurts. And also that quality of stuckness to it, where it's like we go over the same painful story, we soak the same knot in blood again, and it dries again, and there's a sort of circularity to it, where all the time that we stay on that level, the knot is undisentanglable, like we can't solve it on its own level. Something else has to come in. And of course the nature of aversion is that we're pushing something away, like we don't want something. I don't want that person to have behaved like that. Well, they did. And what is our response going to be? Are we going to let our response be dictated by what the other person has said or done? Santra's got a nice thing. He says, don't fight reality. You'll lose. So this is where Akshobhya's clarity really comes in, because actually it's like that white light, it's like we can see the futility of pushing away what has actually happened. It's like we can't go back and change it, we can't make ourselves different, we can't make the other person different. We can carry on pushing away, we can carry on saying I don't want in many different ways, but actually what's going to happen is we'll carry on being entangled, it'll carry on being painful, we won't go anywhere. So Akshobhya is symbolising metta as the natural state that cuts through all those difficult emotions. Later on, I'm going to come on to more sort of like practical, okay, there you are in your meditation and ill will arises, well, what are you going to do? But also, if you consider the amount of energy that we can have tied up in aversion and putting away, and pushing away, when that clarity just cuts straight through. I mean, it's like the sword of Damocles. Do you know that Greek myth? There was this knot that, anyway, a king wanted people to come and untie it, and nobody could. And actually, nobody could untie that knot. And eventually, Damocles comes along, and he just cuts straight through it with a sword, because there's no other way. It's not going to get unpicked on its own level. Something else just needs to come in and see the conditions involved. And suddenly the tangle isn't tangled anymore. And the power of that sword, that's like all the power tied up in us pushing away. That's how powerful metta can be. It can actually be, all the stuff that gets things done in the world, that is the power of us wanting, wanting love, wanting us and others to be well. It's an intensely powerful force. It's a force. So mirror-like wisdom is a gateway to love. Wisdom in particular, because when we're tangled in ill will, we see the faults of the person and the situation very, very clearly, or we see their faults very, very clearly. And we think we're seeing the situation very, very clearly. Oh, I can see exactly what they should have done. So there's a sort of perception of clarity. And yet, it's like we're looking through this distorting lens where all we can see is what's wrong. We're just looking through something which is only showing us a very, very small and distorted part of the picture. We're seeing only what's unpleasant, and we're seeing it only from our point of view. Ill will is me-oriented. But we can use that clarity aspect of hatred to really see the situation clearly. When we see things as they actually are, what we see is connection. Nagarjuna's got this lovely phrase for emptiness or conditionality, where he calls it mutuality of being, where he doesn't see separation. He sees that there is a whole mass of conditions, and everything that is happening is arising on dependence on all the other people, animals, gravity, forces, you know, everything is arising in dependence on everything else. So when we look with that sort of clarity, it makes no sense to look at one small aspect and say, it's your fault. We're ignoring everything else that is going on, no matter how compelling that story about it's your fault may be. So we can look for any connection, and we can know that any sense of connection will take us closer to reality. And actually, this is quite an important point about Pema, this attached sort of sticky affection, because it's like when we encounter that in ourselves, it's like, well, yes, we can see clearly this is sticky. And yet, what we can pursue is the thread of connection in it. You know, our very natural heart desire for, you know, we long for connection. We long for true and deep connection with other human beings, but actually just with everything. And that is what we would find most deeply satisfying. So it's like we can see the stickiness. We can attempt to kind of go, okay, let's let go of the stickiness. But the thread of connection, it's like we're trying to take Pema and we're trying to widen it out so that it's not just about like me, my sexual partner, my child, my mother, my father, my friends. But we're looking and we're seeing, oh, that person over there that I don't know, they are someone's child, they are someone's mother, they are someone's sister. And we're just seeing that connection. They are connected just as we are connected. And when we see conditionality, we also forgive because we understand. We understand, if I had had that conditioning, I'd behave like that. I actually bring that reflection to mind quite a lot in the community when I'm finding somebody quite difficult. And I think, I'd never do that. Why do they behave in that way? And of course, like, I wouldn't do that thing because I don't have their conditioning, you know. I didn't grow up in their family, in their school, with that particular set of circumstances. And if I had, I would probably be behaving just like that. So, clarity. We see things as they are. When we see things as they are, forgiveness and love is the only possible response. It's the only response that makes sense. Okay, so now we're moving on to how does Akshobhya's clarity help us? Well, how does it help us in the metta bhavana? How does it help us with metta in our lives? I'm a Vajra family practitioner, and I think clarity is really important. That's not a technical thing to say. So what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to talk about the principles behind the metta bhavana and some of the pitfalls and how we can avoid them. And there's something about being able to see quite clearly what's going on, where we can kind of think, ah, oh, you know, it's like during the visualization, when it's like, when first we're in the dark, we're just sort of stumbling around and falling over things and going up dead ends and all the rest of it. But it's like the more clarity we can bring to our practice, the more we can think, I went up that path before and it didn't lead anywhere good, so I'm going to take the left turn this time. It's like we can see where we're going. We've got a map. We've got perspective. So probably all meditations, making a sweeping statement, I think all meditations have two aspects to them that are very important. So any meditation you care to name, there will be an awareness aspect and there will be a kindness aspect. And in the Metta Bhavana, the kindness aspect is the explicit one. That's the one, we think developing loving kindness, the Metta Bhavana. So that's very, very evident. And the awareness aspect, it's more implicit than noticing what's going on. So I'm going to be touching in on themes that Ratna Bandhan has already been exploring as she's been talking to us about the different Brahma Viharas. So with the awareness aspect, they don't quite... I couldn't quite make them fit, but the awareness aspect, it's perhaps the more receptive aspect of the Metta Bhavana, where we're noticing what is actually going on. This is the turning towards that Ratna Vandana was talking about so beautifully yesterday and the day before. And I'm thinking about this as Akshobhya's right hand, because I'm thinking Akshobhya balances these two qualities, the awareness aspect, the more receptive side of the practice, and then the kindness aspect, which is maybe more active and more about intention. So we've got his right hand touching the earth. So the first point about that, doing the Metta Bhavana, stay embodied, it's so important. So if at any point during that practice we start sort of floating off, come back, breath, belly, body. Can we feel our bottom on the ground? Are we in our bodies? And just keep checking back with that. Keep on staying real. It's just very easy to try and do the Metta Bhavana from somewhere over there that isn't our actual, it's not us and it's not our experience. It's somewhere over there. So Akshobhya's right hand, stay in your body, touch the earth of your actual experience. You can really use that in the stages as we bring people to mind. We'll just notice, we bring our friend to mind. Does our breathing ease and lighten or not? When we bring the difficult person to mind, do we find our shoulders start tensing up around our ears or our belly clenches? Our body holds a huge amount of information, so just keep on kind of like coming back to it and saying, how does my body feel about this? It'll tell us. And then the other aspect of staying real in the practice is giving ourselves enough time to notice what our actual responses are, either to ourselves or to the person we're bringing to mind. So, before we sort of pitch in with the may this person be well, can we sort of actively notice, how do I feel towards this person? Because the thing about our emotional experience, like it's nuanced. We don't feel just one way. So, you know, if I bring, I've got a really good friend in Sheffield, Leela Matty. If I bring her to mind, I do feel this sort of love and opening. But at different times, you know, I might feel a bit of irritation, or I might feel a bit of envy, or I might, you know, there could be all sorts of things going on. One of the big pitfalls in practicing the Metta Bhavana is we start having an emotional response to someone, and straight away something kicks in that says, I shouldn't be having that response. That's not Buddhist. I'm supposed to be practicing Metta. I'm not supposed to be feeling annoyed or irritable or angry or envious or, you know, whatever those undesirable things that we might be experiencing are. And particularly if we're on retreat, actually. I'm on the Brahma Viharas retreat, so I should be living in the Brahma Viharas all the time. Oh dear, I'm not. So then it's like, well, we're not doing the turning towards. We're turning away. We're thinking, I don't want this experience. Go away. Go away. And actually, that's just part of the ego project. That's just us wanting to be a certain sort of person. I want to be someone who always feels metta and never feels irritability. I tell you personally, I'm quite a long way from that point. And all the energy tied up in those responses of craving and aversion, it's like that's our raw material. So if we're not able to turn towards and be with those experiences, actually, what's happening is we're cutting ourselves off from our energy, and our practice will go sort of, well, dead and flat, or, you know, we'll just feel like we're not getting anywhere and we can't work out why. So can we be with emotional experiences that we don't want, perhaps particularly ones we feel shame or guilt around? You know, this emotion makes me a bad person if I feel it. Can we, with Akshobhya's mirror-like wisdom, that beautiful lake, that reflects things exactly as they are. Akshobhya won't turn away. Akshobhya will stay clear, calm and loving no matter what's going on with us internally. Can we do that for ourselves? So the question that naturally arises at this point is, but surely I am trying to transform unskillful emotions such as anger, resentment, fury, clinginess, envy. I'm trying to transform them. I'm trying to transform them, so I shouldn't be letting them be in my mind. I'm trying to make them be something else. If I'm spending time with those emotions, if I'm allowing myself to turn towards those emotions, surely that's the wrong direction. Surely I'm going to be making them grow. I'm just going to end up being this ball of irritation or whatever it is. And that can be a very real fear, that if we let ourselves experience those emotions, we'll just become them. That'll be that. So, clarity. I love clarity. So this is where we really need to understand the difference between karma, which is choices, current intentional actions that we're making now, and karma vipaka. Vipaka meaning fruit, and karma meaning intentional action. So karma vipaka is the fruit or the result of actions and conditioning that is coming from the past. It's all those sheep tracks across the mountainside that Ratnavandana has been talking about, those you know, those grooves worn in our being over years and years and quite probably lifetimes. And in this moment, okay, I am a person with a tendency to irritability. I'm afraid so, folks. In this moment, I can't sit here and say, I'm not going to have those sheep tracks in my being. I refuse to be a person who has irritability arise. Well, actually, that's just fact. Like, you know, irritability does arise. And that is vipaka. That is the result of my personality created by my habits over years and years and years. So when an emotion is arising in our psyche, actually, that is vipaka. So the positive side to this is as we practice the Brahma Viharas over years and years and years, the vipaka that arises in our psyche is a sense of connection naturally arises, a sense of compassion naturally arises. Do you see what I mean? So it works both ways. It's not just, it's not just like the negative things that make tracks and the positive things don't. You know, the positive things also make tracks. So if an emotion is arising that we really don't like, we really don't want, actually, can we just bring a sense of forgiveness? Like, can we forgive ourselves that emotion is arising in us? There's nothing we can do about it now. But what we do want to look at is, so what is the choice we are making at that moment? That's the fresh karma. So, okay, the irritability arises. Do I then sit there in my meditation? So when I get distracted in meditation, I tend to kind of think of cutting things I could say to people, or kind of think how I could put my points over really clearly so they understand I'm right. Or I start writing angry emails. And as soon as I'm sitting in meditation writing an angry email, that's me creating fresh karma. Or going over the story again of what they did to me and how outrageous it is. That's me creating fresh karma. But then if I can take a step back and think, this situation has arisen again. Where do I feel that in my body? What's the emotional experience? Like, you know, what's the top? You know, there's anger. Okay, I'm really annoyed. And then under that, like, what's underneath that? Pema Chodron talks about finding the soft spot under the hard emotion. And so under anger, irritability, resentment, something like that, there's always something softer, and it's something like, I just feel really hurt. I feel devastated by whatever that situation was. Or I just feel really sad that with our friendship the way it is, that it went, you know, we had that argument. You know, there's a sort of softness. And that softness, there'll be connection in that. With the aversion, there's always a sense of pushing away, of separation. And as soon as we get to the vulnerability, the softness, there's this sense of, kind of sadness that the connection is broken or something like that. And we're trying to get to that soft, vulnerable, that hurts kind of place when we're working with ill will. And as Ratna Vandana was saying the other day, it just becomes obvious how the Brahma Viharas are this mandala of practices, as she was talking about, because you can see that in that, here we are with Akshobhya working with metta and ill will. But then when we touch the ill will, quite often, well, there's painfulness in there. And so then we go towards karuna, to compassion, and think, oh, actually, I feel really hurt in that. And, and then that's the thing that will bring us back into connection. Yeah. So, understanding the importance of turning towards really means we need to understand, well, how is it that emotional patterns do transform? And basically, how they transform is by us being able to bring awareness to them and love to them. It's like, well, it's like cooking. So, you know, when Naina's cooking the supper, it's like she puts all the raw ingredients in a pan and then she cooks it all under flames. And, you know, the heat kind of slowly seeps through. And if the heat's too hard, well, too strong, well, you burn everything, don't you? And if there's not enough heat, it doesn't cook. So, you know, we're trying to bring, you know, gentle awareness and kindness to all our experience, no matter what it is. It's like we're holding it in this crucible of awareness and kindness. And then you can't make something cook. You know, Naina doesn't stand there sort of prodding something and saying, you know, cook, damn you, cook. I think she's too good a cook for that. It's like it will happen by itself if we can bring the awareness and the kindness. That's all we need to do, and actually that's all we can do. And I'm just going to quote you a bit from the Brahmavihara Sutta, because I love the Pali Canon, and it says this. Not about the cooking. but interestingly, the Brahmavihara Sutta itself is all about karma and how to purify karma. And this bit's... Oh, I just love this bit. It's not... Anyway. Before, this mind of mine was limited and undeveloped. But now this mind of mine is immeasurable and well developed, and whatever action was done there in a measurable way does not remain there, does not linger there. So there's something about as our minds just become bigger and more vast and more like that great lake of Akshobhya, it's like all our sort of pettiness and our meanness and our carping criticism, it's like it's just all kind of held in this much, much bigger lake, so it just doesn't remain there, like things just wash through. And then the sutta goes on to say, one who practices the awareness release of the Brahmaviharas discerns, whatever evil action I have done by this body born of action, that will all be experienced here and now, in this life. It will not come to be hereafter. So, basically, that's Pali Canon speak for what I just said. that kind of... if we experience our vipaka, our emotions, here and now, like here, this cushion... It won't roll on like driving our behaviour through the rest of our life and sort of creating more and more difficulty. If we can just be with it, experience it right here, like it just will dissipate.
What was that sutta?
It's called the Brahmaviharas Sutta. I can put it out if you like.
Mm-hmm. Where is it and which one of the...
I'll just put a photocopy out and you can, you know, the reference will be on it, Alan. Okay, so all that was about touching the earth, Akshobhya touching the earth. And then we come to the other side of things, Akshobhya's left hand. Left is... Yeah, the right-hand side is usually sort of like compassion side, and the left-hand side of these figures is the wisdom side. So he's holding the Vajra completely poised. And that Vajra shatters delusion, and it means that we see clearly. And when we see clearly, That means that we understand the effects of our choices. We understand that if we act with intentions of love, kindness, well-wishing, it will have one sort of effect. And if we act out of ill will, stickiness, clinginess, it'll have another sort of effect. And we see that clearly. So, you know, we've got this whole sort of like accepting and being with and allowing side. But it's also important to have the clarity of realising that what we do with our minds has consequences. So Bhante really famously said, don't accept yourself. So, you know, there's this sort of like, you've got all these self-help books about how to accept yourself, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, all very well on its own level. I'm not dissing them. However, actually, if I wake up one morning and I'm feeling really irritable, and then I go out into the community and I snap the head off the first three people that I see, actually, I am creating suffering for myself in the future, and I am, I'm damaging my relationships with other people, and I'm causing them suffering. So it's like we're holding these two aspects where, you know, we're clearly understanding that we need to be with, and we need to not judge, condemn, beat ourselves up for our vipaka. And at the same time, it is very important to have the conscious intention that Ratnavandana was exploring so beautifully yesterday, last night. And, you know, it can feel like they're in conflict, like, but if I accept my irritability, then how can I have a clear intention? But actually, they're completely not. You know, as long as we've got the clarity about what's going on, we can be being with our vipaka, and we can be holding a conscious intention that for the future we want our mind to go in a different way, and then we're acting in accordance with that. So this is so what we're in the territory of here is samprajanya, which is an aspect of mindfulness, and Anālayo translates it as clearly knowing, and Bhante translates it as mindfulness of purpose. I have a practice where before I go to bed at night, well, actually, I'm in bed. And the last thing I do before I go to sleep is I'm opening up, I'm sort of contacting love as a force in the universe in relation to me. And I do that through my Yidam, my Treya, who's actually Akshobhya's family. You see, I've got the wisdom Buddha Akshobhya. But how wisdom shows up in the world, that's his bodhisattvas, okay? So that's Maitreya, embodiment of metta, of loving kindness. And his other bodhisattvas are, Kshitigarbha, going into the hell realms, compassion without bounds. And, Vajrapani, so unstoppable energy. Anyway, so that's what Akshobhya looks like when he's acting in the world. Anyway, so before I go to sleep, I'm contacting that sense of love, just like love that is much bigger than I am. And when I wake up first thing in the morning, that is the first thing that I try and bring to mind, is this consciousness of like love as a force in the universe that it's like I can tap into, but also that's my potential, like that's who I can be. So that, you know, that's one way of kind of setting a clear intention and kind of just going back again and again and again to our intention. And I think choosing the right intention is quite important, because I think the intention aspect of the metta-bhavana, so we sit there and we can simply make the wish, may this person be well. And I must say, I just love the traditional phrases. It's just so simple. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to produce anything. I don't have to make anything happen. I'm not trying to create an emotional response. I'm just sitting there and thinking, if I could choose, I would choose that you were happy. If I could choose, I would choose that I were truly fulfilled. And it's like, there's, you know, if we can let it be like that, like there's no more to it, if you see what I mean. We're doing it and everything else will happen by itself. Where intention goes wrong is when it turns into willfulness and forcing our experience and sort of like trying to will a particular experience to happen. And actually, well, if you've ever tried that, you've probably found it doesn't work. And if it does, you just get a headache afterwards. So if you're someone who finds that you do try to force your meditation or will your meditation or try too hard, well, you just want to look at what your intention is going to be, because it might be that your intention is coming back again and again and saying, can I soften here? Can I be present here? Is kindness possible here? Do you see what I mean? So it's like you're choosing an intention that is appropriate to what you're trying to do in your meditation, and that will be different from person to person. So if you're someone who just sort of sits in meditation and vagues out and kind of floats around and has fantasies, well, we probably do need to have quite a clear intention about wishing well and metta. And actually, it's important, you know, it is important. We will have an effect if we develop metta, and actually if we don't develop it, that will also have an effect. So if we're a vaguing out sort of person, it's really important to keep coming back again and again to the clarity of, well, what are we trying to do here? But then if we're on that more willful end of the spectrum, where we're sort of like seizing our meditation by the throat and oh, I have to tell you this. It's just a lovely simile where the Buddha's talking about effort in meditation, and you probably all know about the lute strings. But he's also got this lovely one where he tells somebody, well, if you were going to catch a quail, you know, a little bird, well, if a man were to catch a quail and he squeezes it too tight, well, he breaks its ribs and the quail dies. But if you hold the quail too loosely, well, you've let go of the quail. The quail just flies off. You've lost the quail. So you might just want to think, well, in meditation, are you a person who tends to grip your quail too tightly? Do you squash your quail until it can't breathe or even dies in your hands? Or do you tend to let your quail escape and it just sort of flies all over the room squawking? And then you're choosing your intention according to what you need to be doing in the meditation. Okay, so I think we'll finish there. And I'm just going to finish with another quote from the Pali Canon, because I love the Pali Canon. Who says the Pali Canon isn't poetic? So this is a whole sutta. It's actually called the Metta Sutta. And it's not the Karaniya Metta Sutta, for those that are familiar with that. It's different. But it's just describing a whole path based on developing the Brahma Viharas. And it says, for one who has developed awareness release. So just think, awareness release. What would that be like? For one who has developed awareness release through goodwill, metta, she may enter and remain in the beautiful liberation. Awareness release through goodwill, has the beautiful as its excellence. So we can just go into a silent tea break and walking outside, and you can just take that with you. Like, what is that like if the awareness release through goodwill, which is release into the beautiful, where instead of ill will, where all we see is the ugly and the painful, what we see is the beautiful.